This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 14th of February 2025. Hello. And welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I'm accompanied in the studio by readers Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Paul Newman.
Hello.
The first thing to say is if you know someone or if you have a problem with the recordings you have received from us, please contact us on the number on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, please make sure it's plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, don't forget that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent first on the list. Now let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. Multi-million pound boost for Gurkhas. Residents clear neglected and overgrown path. And council under fire over lack of house building. And the first headline story, Daphne, please.
Multi-million pound boost for Gurkhas. Winchester's Gurkha Museum says it will transform into a global reference centre for Gurkha heritage after securing a multi-million pound grant. The grant, totalling £2,681,278, has been awarded by the National Lottery Heritage Fund and will facilitate the museum's redevelopment plan, also known as Project CADA. With Financial Heritage Fund and the Brigade of Gurkhas, the Gurkha Museum in Peninsula Barracks will rent. This will involve stripping out the 30-year-old displays and redesigning and refitting the public galleries to represent the authentic Nepali and Gurkha story through a new layout. The museum will also digitise and catalogue more than 30,000 archives to ensure that stories and insights that have been collected will be preserved. These records will be able to be accessed from all over the world. Meanwhile, over the next 3 years, the museum will set up a fully funded educational activities programme to educate visitors about the impact Gurkha service has had on the nation. In anticipation of this funding, the museum has developed an international research, lecture and education centre, which will remain open when the museum's public galleries are closed and undergoing renovation. To receive the National Lottery Heritage Fund grant, the museum must fund match, with the museum's fundraising efforts being led by the Brigade of Gurkhas. According to the museum, every serving officer and soldier has donated a day's pay in support of the heritage charity. Dr. Dara Boya, director of the Gurkha Museum Trust, this significant funding from the National Lottery Heritage Fund was a wonderful end to our 50th anniversary year. The Heritage Fund support means that the fundraising target is within reach that will allow us to turn the Gurkha Museum into a must-see visitor attraction and the global reference centre for Gurkha heritage. A refreshed, engaging and accessible museum as the hub for an ambitious programme of public engagement is a fitting way to pay tribute to the Gurkhas for their exceptional service to Britain for more than two centuries. Stuart McLeod, Director of England, London and the South at the National Lottery Heritage Fund, said, "We're proud to support the redevelopment and reinterpretation of the Gurkha Museum through Project CADA. It is fantastic news that thanks to the National Lottery players, the museum will be able to fulfil long-held ambitions to collect and preserve more Gurkha heritage and celebrate these inspiring stories with an ever broader range of people."
Residents clear neglected and overgrown path. A Winchester resident is taking it upon himself to maintain a path that has been neglected for 25 years. Sarum Road Path, which is located at the back of King's School in Winchester, is a popular path for runners, dog walkers and school children. Last October, it became too overgrown to be used, and Andrew Hammond, 57, felt he had to clear it himself. Andrew said, "When the leaves fell in October, I decided to have a go at clearing them away rather than letting them mulch and mud as usually happens. I then decided to have a bit of a go at chopping back the remaining brambles and branches. Before I knew it, I found the original edges of the path, which had been buried for several years. Since October, I've visited 35 times, including Christmas Day. In December, a tree came down, and the post on Facebook resulted in a very helpful supporter coming along with a chainsaw. I've also had help from other community-minded folk. After his post on Facebook about the fallen tree, Andrew received messages from other locals who wanted to help his effort, which led to a day where as many as six people were out repairing the path at once. Andrew works as a part-time finance director, which he says gives him plenty of time to devote to making a difference. Another resident, Ruth Hellier, joins Andrew when she can, and has even gone to maintain the path by herself. They use a variety of equipment, including electric hedge trimmers, long loppers for the high branches, and shovels. Hampshire County Council Countryside Department has been approached for a comment about the path having to be maintained by residents. Andrew said, "We are nearly there and the path is so much better. We get lots of amazing feedback and words of thanks. I hope we are providing a bit of an example to take an active role in keeping our area maintained." Sadly, the council just don't seem to have the inclination or the resources to keep up, which I think is crucial to encouraging people to walk and run a little more.
Council under fire over lack of house building. Winchester civic chiefs should be building houses, not buying them from developers, a meeting heard. Former council was not adding to the stock of affordable homes, but simply buying homes that would have been built anyway. Mr. Tate, speaking of the council's aim to have an extra 1,000 council houses by 2032, said the initial 1,012 had been for the council to build the houses. Instead, it has recently been buying completed homes from developers such as 146 from Carla, Homes at King's Barton. The reason is that it is cheaper, as developers have economies of scale. The council has been building small schemes such as the six passive houses at Southbrook Cottages in Mitchell Deva, and a proposal for a scheme at Woodman Close in Sparsholt. Mr. Tate said, "The very essence of the programme has changed. It is a very disappointing development. The aim was to increase the number of affordable houses and not simply to shift the ownership from registered providers to the City Council. That is no net gain." Housing Committee Chairman Christopher Westwood said building costs had risen 64% in the last 3 years, including the cost of borrowing and raw materials. But he said the council wanted to return to house building when economic circumstances allow. Our business plan is being reviewed constantly and updated every year. As the economic circumstances change, we will pivot away from buying and towards building. People want to live in our council houses. A final business case for Widman Close is being drawn up for decision next month. An outline business case is being prepared for the Corner House pub in North Walls, which could be converted into 6 flats. The City Council is set to increase rents for its tenants by 2.7%.
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. I will go on with the death notices now, and Daphne will follow with Christian comment. Berger. Jennifer Ann died peacefully at home on the 3rd of February 2025, aged 88 years. Cambridge. Margaret John, née Almeida, passed away peacefully at Brackenlea Care Home on the 14th of January 2025, aged 83 years. Cannings. Doreen Joan passed away peacefully at Home Park Nursing Home on the 27th of January 2025, aged 94 years. Collis Neil passed away peacefully on Thursday the 6th of February, aged 81 years. Davidge Sheila Dora, née Stevens, sadly passed away on the 30th of January 2025, aged. Harfield Joyce, known as Yvonne, passed away peacefully at Tegfield House on the 30th of January 2025, aged 4 years. Harris Mary Eleanor, née Bennett, passed away peacefully at home on the 24th of January 2025, aged 98 years. Lydiard Susan Elizabeth passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 31st of January 2025, aged 75 years. Maskill John passed away at Winchester Hospice on the 30th of January 2025. Faro Jenkins, Eileen May, passed away peacefully on Thursday the 23rd of January 2025, aged 91. Shoal Colin passed away peacefully on the 30th of January 2025, aged 77 years. Simmons, David H. David died peacefully on the 19th of January 2025 in Winchester, aged 85. Smith, Irene Gertrude, Trudy, passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospital on the 16th of January 2025, aged 96 years. Wyard, Madeline, née Firmage, passed away on the 17th of January 2025, aged 90 years. Christian comment has been written by Moira Redmond this week. She asks, who is the patron saint of romance? Thank you, Daphne.
I once joined a church committee on which I was the only woman. Early on, there was a discussion of a forthcoming patch event and dates were being thrown around. Eventually, I said, but we can't have it on the 14th of February. Why not? They asked. Because it's Valentine's Day. People are busy, or they hope to be busy, or they can't get a babysitter. It's hard to book anywhere. You could only have it then if it were a specific Valentine's event, which it isn't. Oh, right, okay, they said, and crossed out that date. I'm guessing most people who are interested in the romantic possibilities of the day never give 2 minutes thought to where the name comes from. Isn't it odd to have a strange theoretical religious connection with something as secular as the way Valentine's Day is celebrated now? Though Valentine isn't seen as a serious saint anymore, at least in the Catholic Church. He was perhaps an early martyr who may have secretly married couples, but he was removed from the Catholic calendar of saints in the 1960s, at the same time as many others, for example Philomena and Christopher, because of the lack of evidence of his existence. These saints, in quotes, may have existed, but there are no records. But obviously that hasn't slowed down the growing business of romance, and we can all be amazed at what a big deal the day is in terms of presents, cards, meals out, and basically money spent. Has it gone too far? Got a bit out of hand? There's a church in Dublin that keeps up a devotion to St. Valentine and is apparently much visited by couples. The church has a wonderful prayer. For those who are joined together in the sacrament of marriage, that they may never give up when trials come their way, but may remain faithful to each other and to the Lord who blessed their union. May your love for the Lord be an inspiration for our love for each other, for the love between husband and wife, and for the love and charity we extend to all whom we meet. Nothing to do with red hearts, but heartwarming all the same, and a reminder of something simpler but more permanent and important. In the children's classic book, What Katie Did, by Susan Valentine Party, but it has nothing to do with potential romance. It's just a chance to get together and say nice things about each other and eat delicious food. The anonymous notes and verses are tributes to friendship and joy. Doesn't that sound like a splendid idea? It's easy to think that the world is getting harder and colder, but what we can always try for is more kindness. Discussing love, someone pointed out to me this quote from Alfred Delp, a German Jesuit executed by the Nazis. When through one person a little more love and goodness, a little more light and truth comes into the world, then that person's life has had meaning. Something to aim for around Valentine's Day, and also the rest of the year.
And now, this week's letters to the editor. Nick, can you start us off with Bus Stop Blues, please?
Yes, and this one comes from Malcolm Clark. On Friday, February the 7th, I waited outside Winchester Library in Jury Street for a bus to take me back to Eastleigh. I arrived about 4 minutes before the bus was due, but when I arrived, there was a coach, I think carrying Greg's school pupils on a school trip, occupying the place where the bus would normally stop. And there were also other similar coaches on either side of this. This meant that standing at the bus stop, it was virtually impossible to see which buses were passing, and for the bus driver to see the passengers who were waiting. What I had to do was to move about 20 yards from the bus stop to see it coming, and then move to the other side of the bus so the bus driver could see me. Fortunately, that way I caught the bus, but this was certainly not an ideal situation for me or any other passengers who were waiting for one of the many buses that leave from that stop. I think that the coaches were merely picking up passengers from a school trip, but there was no sign of them moving during the 5 minutes I waited, and I would have thought there should be a limit of how long coaches should be allowed to occupy a bus stop in this manner. As it happens, I could have obtained alternative transport if this situation meant I was unable to catch that bus. But it should also be mentioned that my bus and other buses from the stop go past the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, and anyone waiting for the next bus with the same number would have to wait well over an hour and would be travelling at a time when the traffic would be heavier. I think for people with limited mobility and or hospital appointments, this scenario would be less good. And that letter is from Malcolm Clark, Lee Road, Eastleigh.
City travel is farcical, so writes Andrew Davidson of Fleming Road in Week. Travelling into and or around Winchester is now becoming farcical. On Monday, February the 3rd, my wife and I were going to Tesco in Dwinnell from Week. That part of the journey from the Jolly Farmer to Tesco took approximately 20 minutes. There were two reasons for that, the first being temporary traffic lights just below the Tesco petrol station, and the second on a temporary closure of one lane along North Walls. This caused tailbacks on Andover Road, Worthy Road, City Road, Stockbridge Road, onto City Road or Sussex Street, Sussex Street onto City Road. Utter chaos. It is about time that Hampshire County Council returned North Walls to two-way traffic, placing traffic lights at the junction of North Walls and Union Street stroke Eastern Lane. Additional traffic light for vehicles travelling up North Wall at the junction with Jury Street. The benefits of these changes would be that traffic going from, say, the Broadway to the hospital could travel along Union Street, North Walls, City Road and Sussex Street to Rumsey Road, thereby missing the city centre. And those going from the Broadway to Stockbridge Road or Andover Road taking the same route up to City Road. These changes would also alleviate much of the traffic going around the one-way system. Additionally, on our return journey, on entering Hairstock from Andover Road, we came across another set of temporary traffic lights. Major works on that road were completed at the end of January, but again, more work. So writes Andrew Davison of Fleming Road. I hope you've got a mental map of those journeys better than mine.
Thank you.
Daphne.
Now, Lawrence Jones writes about the planning application for building houses off Lanham Lane. As a local resident who brought attention to this planning application some weeks ago, I would like to give my strong support to our City Council leader Martin Todd's objections to this proposal, as reported in the Chronicle February the 6th. With the unfinished development at King's Barton and new major project at Sir John Moore Barracks, Councillor Todd states the Lanham Lane proposal of up to 188 new houses is not needed. I would like to highlight also the reasons why Lanham Lane is totally inappropriate. This site is designated countryside and would create a precedent for further encroachment into the farmland adjoining Dean Lane. The very nature of this area would be changed. It is proposed the site access will be via Tegdown Meads, but the junction with Dean Lane is already a difficult junction. The site could see a doubling of traffic. Also, traffic from the site wishing to go to Stockbridge, Andover or A34 will use the more direct Lanham Lane and Salters Lane, which are single lane roads. The junction with Stockbridge Road is regularly congested and great care is needed. Also mentioned by the Keir Group, the developers, that Hairstock and Henry Beaufort schools off Hairstock Road would be available, but that traffic could again be using Lanham Lane and Salters Lane. The adjacent Dean Lane, also for the most part, only has one lane and is frequently used by cyclists, pedestrians and school children. It is questionable whether the bus service to Tegdown would provide adequate public transport, although Keir claimed the site would have excellent access to services and facilities. This is clearly not the case. The small retail development and doctor's surgery at Week are already overstretched. The proposed Lanham Lane development is entirely inappropriate, and I encourage local residents to oppose. And that comes from Lawrence Jones, Dean Place, Teckdown, Winchester.
Kevin De Cruz writes about NHS decline. If anyone is thinking of booking NHS transport to hospital, my advice is don't bother. I miss the very important prostate consultant because hospital transport booked to Southampton General failed to turn up, despite telling me an hour before they were on their way. I've lodged a complaint with South Ambulance Transport. This comes a month after having a catheter brutally applied to me at Winchester A&E. Again, a complaint has been time.
Church change. This is from Eunice Stevens. All seems to have gone quiet on correspondence about the continuing troubles relating to the Anglican Church and of Winchester Cathedral. Indeed, the last letter I saw in the Hampshire Chronicle was on January the 2nd from Paul Wing. Whilst he acknowledges the irreparable damage done by John Smythe to Wykhamists over decades, stating that the facts speak for themselves, he fails to acknowledge that they were wilfully concealed from the public for all that time. Notwithstanding, in the same breath, he calls for us all to stop speculating on the reasons for the recent resignations at Winchester Cathedral. He states that we should trust the findings and conclusions of the review commissioned by Bishop Mount Stephen. How can that be, as the report is confidential to the bishop, so that he can choose what are the findings, if any, to share with even the dean and chapter, let alone mere Winchester churchgoers and residents? The Anglican Church has been self-regulating for centuries, since Henry VIII was proclaimed its head. Look at all the harm that has been done in that time to innocent victims. Yet we are still not supposed to ask questions of those who wield ultimate power in the Anglican Church and sit ex officio in the House of Lords, preaching to us how we should live Christian lives. Isn't it high time it is regulated by an independent body? And that's from Una Stevens, Cliffway, Compton.
This next letter comes from Peter Rees of the Winchester Labour Party, and it's headed No Surprise. It should be no surprise that the poorly staffed and remotely managed W.H. Smith shop and post office might be closed in yet another sell-off. There are 5,000 related jobs at stake, let alone yet another removal of a high street facility. WHS describes the post offices as a profitable and cash-generative part of the group, coupled with no certainty that agreement will be reached. Nevertheless, with no mention of public inconvenience, shares rose significantly. This has all come about as a direct consequence of the Lib-Con-Dems Post Office and Royal Mail privatisation under the sure-footed hand of Vince Cable, a dancing minister in the coalition of chaos and public service sell-off in 2013 and 2015, when these services were separated. No investment in the organisation, and by 2017, £800 million had been paid to shareholders, one sum exceeding £355 million. By November 2021, another £400 million had been donated to shareholders and investors. At least Cable followed the coalition profit for cronies mantra, with no effective interest or investment in such public services. His coalition deal behind closed doors with WHS did not benefit the public or loyal, hard-working post office and Royal Mail staff whatsoever. Here, an excellent local sub-post office has never been replaced, and Winchester's main post office has been a complete disaster from day one. Staff shortages, increased range and number of counter provisions, self-service machines requiring continual staff oversight, and perpetual long queues have demonstrated WHS's total lack of interest in delivering a decent public service. The Labour government has been elected to rapidly improve the delivery of public services, investing in change for their widespread development and improvement. It is quite possible that the Post Office and Royal Mail will return to public ownership and investment soon. And that's from Peter Rees, Winchester Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
The next letter is entitled News Blackout, and that comes from Roger Stevens. Our MP has voted to compensate WASPI women for their unpleasant surprises on their 60th birthdays, Chronicle February the 6th. But the Labour government voted against it. Well, at least they have got something right. Apparently, an independent report has found that WASPIs suffered an injustice due to a failure to properly inform them of pension age changes. The problem is that WASPI women live in a news blackout environment. If our MP thinks he can curry favour with them by voting for their compensation, he is mistaken. WASPI women don't read the Chronicle, or indeed any other paper, so they will have no idea he is doing it. Whether any Chronicle readers think such people should be compensated for the consequences of their ignorance is open to question. Our MP would do better to urge the government to interview the few WASPIs who have broken cover and see if there is any avenue through which they can be contacted. Should they have tried X, TikTok, or whatever? Hey, whatever is a grand name for a new platform, isn't it? A few weeks ago, my previous letter appeared here, advocating that WASPI women should not be allowed to vote, being so ignorant of current events. I expected a storm of disagreement, but the silence was deafening. I rest the case. And that is from Roger Stevens, Cliff Way, Compton.
Follow that, Paul.
Yes, indeed. Watch out. Lack of football is a serious concern. This is a letter from John Kind, well, it's K-I-N-D, and Sarah Arnold from Winchester Bid. Chris Gillam has entitled his views about the relationship between parking provision and economic vitality in urban centres, reference Chronicle Letters, January the 16th. However, his comments about the seething shopping streets of Winchester in December are misleading. During a run-up to Christmas, footfall was, of course, much higher than usual. But our recent research suggests that for 2024, as a whole compared with 2023, footfall into retail outlets on the High Street was unchanged. It fell by 2% in city centre locations, not on the High Street. Our findings also highlight that lack of footfall is the most serious concern for Winchester's retailers. John Kind and Sarah Arnold, authors of Winchester Bid Quarterly Business in Culver Road, Winchester.
And this letter comes from George Spencer, and it's headed Support Crucial. So far, it has been a difficult season for Winchester City Football Club. With 14 matches left, they are just 2 points above the relegation zone and facing a crucial run of games to stay in the Southern Premier League. This is where you come in, as your support could be the difference between relegation and survival. There are 7 home games left. Hanwell on Saturday the 8th, Sholing on the 22nd of March, Merthyr Town on 29th March, Plymouth Parkway on 5th of April, Chertsey Town on 19th of April, and Taunton Town on the 26th of April, which is the final match of the season. In addition, there are reachable away games against Havant and Waterlooville on 1st of March, Poole Town on the 8th of March, Hungerford Town on the 22nd of March, Bracknell Town on the 12th of April, and Totten on Easter Monday. Your support at all of these games is crucial. 10 years ago, the idea of Winchester City playing at this level seemed like a pipe dream, and it would be a massive shame if it were to slip away. And that's from George Spencer, Anstey Road, Alton.
And Penny Morgan would like to give sincere thanks. I'd like to give sincere thanks to all those lovely people who helped me when I took a hard tumble following an unwinnable argument with the wall and pavement in Romsey's Latimer Street last Saturday. At the time, I was too discombobulated to properly appreciate them. They seemed to miraculously appear from the wings, props at the ready. Within seconds, I was sat down, passed a bottle of water, and given a plaster, plus, from a fourth Samaritan, some sage advice following a fall. They've restored my somewhat battered and bruised faith in humanity's essentially altruistic nature. So my grateful thanks. The world needs more of you. And that's from Dr. Penny Morgan, King Somborne.
Thank you, everyone. If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962... 860 836. That's 01962 860 836, or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could write an old style letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We'll continue now with editorial comment, first person, and Balgarum. To heads up her article this week with community action should not be needed. Paul.
We devote a page to a story that should never have been written. Or rather, a story that should never have needed to have been written. It's on page 27 and concerns neighbours who've got so fed up with an overgrown path that they've taken to clearing it themselves. Andrew Hammond reckons the Sarum Road path has been neglected for a quarter of a century, even though it is on a busy route near King's School that is popular with local people, runners and dog walkers. Last autumn it got so bad that the way was impenetrable, so Andrew and neighbours, including Ruth Hellyer, have taken action. Andrew told us, "When the leaves fell in October, I decided to have a go at clearing them away rather than letting them mulch and mud, as usually happens. I then decided to have a bit of a go at chopping back the remaining brambles and branches, and before I knew it, I found the original edges of the path, which had been buried for several years." Hats off to him. To him, Ruth, and the others. But it really is an indictment of local and national government. Minor in itself, it is a symbol of the slow decline of our local authorities, who simply do not have the money to do the things that they ought to be doing. Cutbacks have been a feature of local government for decades, but it has intensified in the last 15 years and an age of austerity. It is a sorry state of affairs that community-minded people feel the need to step in and do this work. And simply put, if they didn't, then it would not get done. And it is better that it is done. So we salute Andrew and his team.
In first person this week is Daphne.
I couldn't sleep last night as someone messaged me, and then I lay awake wondering who it might be until I got up, saw who it was, and texted them back. I think I might be addicted to my phone. There we were, in the most luxurious hotel, in the most amazing country, surrounded by some of the most exhilarating experiences, and my friend was caught up with her phone. It's not just her. The week before, I had been in a ski resort, surrounded by a wealth of activities, but often caught myself slipping into my phone, 10 minutes turning into an hour in the blink of an eye. As I look round, I notice more people in these amazing places, head down, fingers scrolling, oblivious to what was happening in real life. Every shop assistant at the airport seemed to be sitting on their phone, every passenger on the plane, every guest at the restaurant. One night I was eating dinner with a dad and his two teenage daughters. He told his daughters to put away their phones while they ate. No sooner had their plates been cleared and one was back on Snapchat. "But Dad, just because I have a social life and you don't," came her reply when she was told to either put the phone away or leave the table. I took a book away with me to read, a simple, trashy romantic novel, something in the past I would have been able to read in a few sittings. However, I only managed to get halfway through this holiday. Why? It was competing with my phone for attention. Facebook, X, Insta, LinkedIn, TikTok, Google. Even if you block one app, another will spring up to take its place. It seems our electronic devices are not just draining our time, they are also draining our spirits. The head teacher of the school my children go to sent a message to parents only yesterday, warning them about the dangers of excessive screen time on young minds. He cited research by social psychologist Jonathan Haidt, which highlights growing concerns about how excessive screen use is affecting children's mental and emotional health. He said, "Specifically, studies show that increased time spent on screens, especially on social media, can be linked to higher rates of anxiety, depression, and less face-to-face social interaction. Whilst screens can seem like an easy and fun way to occupy children, I would encourage you to be mindful of your child's screen time and to foster habits that prioritise face-to-face interaction and outdoor play." There's no doubt that technology has its place, but at what cost? Are we growing an army of addicted phone zombies? The power of the algorithm, which creates personal feeds, making them highly addictive, is perhaps only just being recognised. As a society, we recognise the addictive properties of nicotine, alcohol, drugs, gambling, even sex. That feeling of euphoria, the dopamine hit, and the struggle to concentrate or function properly without it? Isn't it about time we start to recognise the dangers that lie in the palm of our hands? Mobile phone addiction has its own name, nomophobia. And many people with a phone addiction may experience anxiety, agitation, and disorientation if they are unable to use their smartphone. The Addiction Centre, an American website, says that as of 2024, there are over 6.8 billion smartphone users in the world, and within that population, 6.3% have a phone addiction. Incredibly, according to a 2024 survey, it says 50% of Americans spend 5 to 6 hours on their smartphone every day. I reckon that 6.3% is just the tip of the iceberg. Look around and you'll see that we all need to work on finding that balance between tech and real life in order to develop stronger social skills, emotional resilience, and healthier sleep patterns. Haidt's advice is for children to avoid screens until their teenage years, and even then to limit screen time significantly. His message, in essence, is that the more time children spend on screens, the more they become addicted, and the worse they feel. And I feel that. I think we all do.
Now, Belgarum. Belgarum usually looks at Winchester from an alternative angle. This week, an academic edits a book. Tell us more, Nick.
A new book edited by University of Winchester academic explores ways to help staff and students become more innovative and creative. Creative Learning, Teaching and Assessment for Arts and Humanities Higher Education, published by Bloomsbury, was edited by Glenn Fosbray, Associate Dean for Humanities and Social Sciences at Winchester. In the collection of essays, tutors working in arts and humanities describe how they think creatively about their teaching, module design and extracurricular activities, without losing sight of academic rigour. The book explores experimental learning environments, collaborations between student and lecturer, development of employability and transferable skills, creative and imaginative assessment design, and embedding mental well-being techniques into curricula. Mr. Fosbray said, although the book eventually moved on from its working title of Thinking Outside the Box, that core idea never changed, and the end product succeeds in demonstrating how HE, higher education practitioners, can push boundaries to enhance the student and staff experience. Mr. Fosbray has written one of the 11 chapters looking at how graduate writing weekends can enhance the post-university experience. Two further chapters have also come from Winchester staff.
Thank you. Now let's take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. On Friday the 21st of February, here's a half-term children's and family concert by the Virtuosi Strings. This is at 11 o'clock in the morning, and it's at St John's Church, Northington, near Alsford. That sounds very nice. Then on Saturday the 22nd of February, Who's Next? It's a Who tribute band. They are on at the Railway Inn in St Paul's Hill, Winchester. And on Sunday the 23rd of February, Come and Sing the Sound of Music. There's a day of singing the well-known songs from the musical, and that's at a St. Vigor Way, Winchester, and tickets can be bought for that at 07720 526. On Friday the 28th of February, Claire Teal from Radio 2, the jazz broadcaster, is at the Theatre Royal Winchester. That's at 7:30 in the evening, and tickets are available from the Theatre Royal. And again, on Wednesday the 12th of March, looking a bit further ahead, Frankenstein. The Discarded Nut Theatre Company presents Mary Shelley's Gothic masterpiece in a haunting new adaptation. And that's the nutshell. That's King's Walk, Winchester. And one other little article with a What's On theme is that show to put the fun into science experiments. Children are being given the opportunity to enjoy spectacular experiments on stage at the Theatre Royal at Winchester. The exciting science show will feature a wide range of experiments, including a recreation of a volcanic eruption, a vacuum cleaner transformed into a missile launcher, and a smoke blaster. It's aimed at children aged 4 and upwards, and it promises a mix of fun and factual content, making it an ideal outing for families. The exciting science show will take place on Sunday, February the 23rd at 11 a.m, and tickets are available through the Theatre Royal box office. And now here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 15th of February, the sun will set at 5:21 p.m. and on Wednesday the 19th of February, the sun will rise at 9:11 a.m. and will set at 5:28 p.m. And now on to items of general news. Paul, would you like to kick us off, please?
Home for refugees is close to opening. A Winchester City Centre house to be used by refugees is nearing opening. Refurbishment of 59 Colebrook Street is complete and it has been handed over to City Council housing officers who are preparing it before the 6 new occupants move in. They are likely to be from Afghanistan. In the long term, the house will be used for people in need of temporary accommodation. It was previously used for hotel workers. The Cabinet Housing Committee Chairman, Councillor Chris Westwood, said, "We can now turn our attention to the stable block at the rear. I'm pleased to see that a tired, neglected building, hopefully put into use. Hopefully it will be great accommodation for our guests when they move in the not-too-distant future. The work has been paid for by Hampshire County Council, with approval granted in 2023. Councillor Westwood told the committee about several grants to the council from Hampshire County Council and the government that will help it tackle homelessness. It has received a homelessness prevention grant of £780,000 for 2025-26, a £37,000 to counter domestic abuse for 25-26, and £83,999 for homeless support to fund new posts to help with the impact of the impending closure of Westview House in Highgate, £42,000 winter pressures grant for 2025.
The heart of planetary concern, and that is whales, the fish. The need for global change amid the climate crisis was the hot topic at Winchester Cathedral as the nearly sold-out audience was taken to the deep ocean. On Thursday, February the 6th, the Cathedral joined forces with the University of Southampton to create an evening of science and art underneath the whale exhibition featuring giant sperm whales. Experts in marine biology, authors, composers, and even a lawyer took to the stage to explain to the 500 people in attendance how whales continue to influence our planet and human behaviour. Professor John Copley explained that whales hold ecological importance, even in death, where their bodies create islands of life, with experts finding new species within the carcasses. The impact of whaling, the practice of hunting whales for their meat, blubber, and other products, drastically lowered the number of whales in our ocean, impacting the islands that thrive in their death. Professor Copley said, "It is staggering to consider that we may have wiped out whole life forms before we knew they existed." Since drastic cutbacks in whaling, the number of humpback whales in our oceans has increased by thousands. The professor added, "The end of whaling is a story of hope. It shows us what is possible when we take action." Dr. Ryan Reisinger, Associate Professor in Marine Biology and Ecology, presented his research on tracking whale migrations to understand where they feed and where they give birth. He said, "If we want to conserve these ocean giants, as well as enjoying their presence, we will need scientifically coordinated efforts from local to global scales." Dr. Dinah Lupin, Associate Professor in Law, took the audience back to the 1500s. Dr. Lupin explained that one of the first instances of international law was to justify colonialism, specifically fishing in the deep ocean and the killing of whales. It was not until the creatures went extinct that the industry collapsed and international law changed to protect whales. The doctor called for whales and other animals to be given personhood status, something currently only granted to people and to corporations. Animals are things. They can be owned or destroyed. Animal rights argue that we should expand it to include animals. Although, Dr. Lupin adds, if we could understand whales, it does not mean they would or could engage in the law. Why be a person when you can be a whale? Personhood has done little to secure the rights of most humans. It is failing to protect persons from war, poverty, and genocide. The Whales art installation at Winchester Cathedral will be available until February 26th.
Disruption expected as £210 million M3 work begins. Work on a multi-million pound motorway project is underway, and motorists are being warned about upcoming disruption. National Highways said there will be an overnight closure on Wednesday, February the 17th, closing the M3 Junction 9 northbound carriageway between slip roads. It comes as contractor Balfour Beatty has cleared scrub from the roundabout and is building an equipment compound off Spitfire Link on farmland to the east of the interchange. The scheme could cost over £200 million and is the biggest since the construction of the M3 through Twyford Down in the early 1990s. The scheme is set to last several years and is likely to cause major and chronic traffic disruption across the city, similar to the building of the final link of the M3 between 1992 and 1994. The authority said the overnight closures are planned to start at 8 p.m. and end at 6 a.m. but this can change depending on the volume of traffic and when we can close the lanes safely. There will be a diversion in place over the course of the works. There will also be works in the day in February involving topsoil strips and archaeological surveys. National Highways said, these activities will take place away from the road, but you may see workers and machinery nearby. Apologies for any inconvenience this may cause to your journeys. Contractor Balfour Beatty said, we advise you not to use a sat-nav when following any of our diversions, because there is a risk it could direct you down an unsuitable road or back onto our network where it is closed. Early works at the junction are well underway after beginning in October. According to National Highways, the M3 Junction 9 project to create free-flowing links between the M3 and the A34 in both directions could cost up to £210 million.
Wellbeing sessions aimed at men's health. A series of wellbeing workshops for men is taking place in Winchester. The Cabinet Room is in Jury Street, is hosting the sessions which are designed to provide essential tools and a space for open conversations. Beyond Equality has brought its popular men's wellbeing workshops back to the city, running every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. for 3 weeks. The workshops will provide men with a safe and supportive environment to discuss mental health, relationships and well-being, all while exploring positive masculinity. Men's mental health is an often overlooked topic, and research shows that men are less likely to seek help or open up about their struggles. The series of workshops is a vital opportunity to address these issues in an open, inclusive setting. With the support of funding from Movember, these sessions are designed to equip men with practical skills to support their own well-being and help others around them. The focus is not just on individual health, but on building stronger, more connected communities. Facilitated by experts from Beyond Equality, the sessions will cover key themes around emotional resilience, building supportive friendships, and rethinking masculinity in a way that is positive and healthy. Cabinet Rooms has recently awarded a Grounds of Innovation Award given to the 10 most groundbreaking coffee shops in the UK by a panel of experts. The award recognises that places that inspire creativity and act as hubs for their local communities. Co-owner of Cabinet Rooms, Gary Whiter, said, "We're proud to be hosting these workshops in a collaboration with the charity Beyond Equality. It feels more important than ever to make our space available for local men to come together and talk openly about their well-being. The workshops are free to attend, but spaces are limited. For more details and to register, visit cabinetrooms.com.
Go ahead for 32 flats to replace care home. Plans to demolish a former Winchester care home and replace it with 32 flats have been given the green light despite car parking concerns. Members of Winchester City Council's planning committee approved the proposal from Archell Homes for Berwick Court. The site in Berwick Road, Wick, has been vacant for several years after the nursing home closed. Redevelopment will see 10 one-bed, 22-bed and 2 3-bed flats, with half the homes provided as affordable dwellings. The scheme includes 18 on-site car parking spaces and cycle storage for up to 64 bikes. A council planning officer's report said the car parking provision fell significantly short of the council's adopted parking standards, which would require 48 unallocated or 62 allocated spaces. 16 of the properties will be sold as car-free, the report said, which lowered the shortfall to 21 spaces. The planning committee meeting on Wednesday, February the 5th, was told that the parking provision was low but acceptable due to mitigation measures, which included access to bus and rail facilities, half the development being marketed as car-free, and the applicant offering to fund a car club space in Berwick Road. The application attracted 65 objections and 52 comments in support during public consultations. Berwick Close resident Peter Richards, who spoke at the committee, said the parking provision was laughably insufficient. It is a great irony that a site which has historically provided a service of care to its users and local community is being lined up to do exactly the opposite, Mr. Richards said. St. Barnabas Ward Councillor Johnny Morris said nobody was opposed to the site being redeveloped, but the common theme from objectors was that the scheme would be an overdevelopment which would be intrusive, obstructive and unworkable. Speaking for the applicant, Daniel Wiseman of Gillings Planning said, "The high-quality scheme before you is a well-designed, sustainably located development with the right balance. It is an efficient use of land, and it is the correct amount of parking to ensure it works, but also to encourage residents to walk and cycle." Planning committee members acknowledged it was a difficult application to consider. Councillor Angela Clear said, "You can't get away from the fact that the lack of parking for residents and visitors to the flat, to my mind, is a major concern."
TV antiques expert to offer free valuations. TV antiques expert Paul Martin is to host a free community valuation day in Stockbridge. The event is scheduled for Tuesday, February the 18th at the White Hart Inn and will take place between 10:30 a.m. and 3 p.m. Paul, who is head of valuations at Devizes Auctioneers Henry Aldridge & Son, is encouraging residents to bring along items they are curious about for discussion, valuation and potential sale. Paul, best known for presenting BBC's Flog It, is also a regular on Antiques Road Trip, Britain's Hidden Heritage, and hosts Paul Martin's Auction Showdown on My5. He is interested in assessing a wide range of items, including antiques, collectibles, silver, gold, militaria, and jewellery. The event is part of a series of valuation days he has been running in his role with Henry Aldrich and Son. Paul said, "Stockbridge is such a beautiful town with a rich history, and I'm always amazed by the incredible items that turn up at these events." The valuation day will provide locals with the opportunity to have their items appraised by an expert, gaining insights into both their historical and monetary value. Paul said, "Whether it's a family heirloom, a curious find from a flea market, or an antique that's been gathering dust, I'm excited to hear the stories behind each piece." He added, "While I enjoy my TV work, my true passion has always been antiques. These events let me connect with people, share in their history, and uncover the stories that make these items special." Paul Lockwood, general manager at the White Hart Inn, said, "We are really excited to be hosting the event for Paul Martin and very excited to see all the locals getting their hidden gems evaluated. Hopefully, there will be a few surprises." For more information on Paul Martin's valuation days, visit the Henry Aldrich and Son website. And just as a reminder, the event that this article is about is on Tuesday, February the 18th, at the White Hart Inn in Stockbridge.
Thank you. Paul, what have you got for us?
Chamber Music Festival programme is announced. The programme for the 2025 Winchester Chamber Music Festival has been announced, running from Friday, May the 2nd to Monday, May the 5th. The festival boasts a varied programme featuring concerts and outreach events. It will kick off with a school's performance. The opening concert will then feature pieces from Ravel, Pamela Harrison, and George Crumb's Voice of the Whale. The programme highlights composers who worked in Vienna, including Haydn, Beethoven, Brahms, and others. A Saturday morning concert will focus on this musical legacy with a pre-concert talk on Schoenberg's Early Chamber Symphony. The late night concert will offer a mix of styles, from Brazilian and Nordic dancing rhythms to Bach's solo cello suite. The Royal Academy of Music's emerging string quartet will also perform. The festival's gala concert at the Theatre Royal Winchester will feature larger scale string forces and virtuosic soloists.
And now a short item about a very popular restaurant, Pizza Express. Pizza Express is gearing up to open its new restaurant in Winchester High Street as the sign is taken down at its old home. Workers were seen removing the sign at the restaurant in Bridge Street early on Monday, February the 10th. It comes after months of construction work to create a new Pizza Express in the High Street in the unit that was formerly Debenhams. Fencing around the new location has also been removed. The restaurant is moving after approximately 30 years in Bridge Street. The move comes after Five Guys and Nando's have moved into the other vacant Debenhams units. And that's accompanied by a picture of the front of the old Pizza Express with a guy standing on one of those A-ladders. It's a bit on the short side, and he's on the top of it, and he's just taking away one of the E's from Express. It really does look a bit awkward, because it takes up the whole pavement, which is very narrow, and that road is extremely busy, so I'm sure he managed to get it down.
Historian sheds light on our Saxon queens. A Winchester historian has launched a new book about influential Saxon queens. Gary Honey, an amateur historian from Winchester, released his latest work, Wessex Women of Winchester, on Wednesday, February the 5th. The book was launched at P&G Wells in College Street. It focuses on four queens who significantly influenced Winchester during the late Saxon period. The queens featured include Athelflaed, the daughter of King Alfred and Lady of the Mercians, Elfrida, wife of King Alfred's great-grandson King Edgar, Queen Emma, wife of Canute, and Matilda, the Norman queen who was never crowned due to the usurpation of the throne by her cousin Stephen. The stories of these queens, though well documented individually, are presented together for the first time in this book. Wessex Women of Winchester is described as concise and includes period images licensed from the British Library and Cambridge University Libraries. The book is now available at P&G Wells and the City Museum.
Time for key decision on barracks. Winchester policymakers are poised to make a key decision on development at the St John Moores Barracks. The army base at Flowerdown is due to be vacated by the Ministry of Defence next year. The DIO, the Defence Infrastructure Organisation, is proposing a major mixed-use redevelopment with up to 1,000 houses and a park and ride. There's been some controversy over development on part of the site, which has been retained as chalk downland and never been intensively farmed. Part of the barracks is being proposed as a site of importance for nature conservation. The Labour government has increased its demands on local authorities to provide more houses, with a national target of 1.5 million to 2029. A report to councillors said the master plan will help us to deliver a high quality development solution which responds positively to the site's sensitive location in the countryside, the settlement gap between Winchester and village of Littleton, and reflects the site's characteristics, wider setting and history. Council leader Martin Todd said the council is absolutely committed to ensuring that we maintain control of our planning system so that every new development has the infrastructure it needs and our city continues to thrive. Too many of our neighbouring councils now face planning by appeal, which with developers' half-baked plans forced through, and that's a club we don't want to join. Both the current government and the previous one set us very demanding housing standards, which mean we need to keep bringing new developments forward, but they've got to be done right.
And this item is again about Wales at the Cathedral. Winchester Cathedral will offer families an ocean adventure this half term with a whale themed programme. From February the 15th to the 23rd, visitors can enjoy a range of activities, including interactive trails, circus performances, silent discos, and virtual reality experiences. Children under 16 can enter for free when accompanied by a paying adult. And entry to the Wales exhibition is included with an annual pass. The Ocean Commotion Trail, running until February the 26th, is a free family trail where participants can help six stranded sea creatures find their way home through challenges across the cathedral. On Saturday, a silent disco will take place beneath the whales, from 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m, offering music for all generations. The Whale Circus Show on Wednesday, February the 19th, by Circo Rumbaba, is a colourful puppet performance exploring marine conservation with humour and heart. For those seeking adventure, an Antarctic exploration VR experience on Saturday from 10:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. offers an immersive virtual reality journey to the Antarctic aboard RSS Discovery. For more information and tickets, visit Winchester Cathedral's website.
Knife crime in spotlight. A campaign to reduce knife crime in Hampshire and the Thames Valley has been launched. The South Central Ambulance Service NHS Foundation Trust, SCAS, initiative throughout February aims to highlight the impact of knife crime on victims, families and communities, while raising awareness of emergency first aid for knife crime victims. According to the Office of National Statistics, more than 50,000 knife crimes were reported between September 2023 and September 2024, with more than 2,500 deaths in 2023 alone. Mark Ainsworth-Smith, a consultant pre-hospital care practitioner for SCAS, said, "Tragically, we see a significant number of deaths caused by knife crime and violence in our ambulance service every year. Every one of those deaths is a tragedy for families and friends, and they cause terrible trauma to all those involved." Despite the statistics, a study shows knife crime offences have fallen across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight by 19% since 2022. Patrick Green, Chief Executive of the Ben Kinsella Trust, said, "Education is our most powerful tool in the fight against knife crime. That is why awareness-raising campaigns are so important. We need to equip young people with the knowledge and skills to navigate potentially dangerous situations and understand the devastating consequences of knife crime."
Fast track to devolution will transform local government. Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner has approved the Hampshire Solent bid for devolution. But what is devolution? What does it mean for the region? And why have May's county elections been postponed? After 8 attempts, devolution is now set to happen, and here is all you need to know about it. Hampshire currently operates under a two-tier system alongside two unitary authorities. The two-tier system includes Hampshire County Council as the upper tier authority and district and borough councils such as Winchester, Test Valley and Havant as the second tier. Each tier has distinct responsibilities. The County Council manages services like roads, transport, adult social care and children's services, whereas the district and borough councils handle housing, planning and waste collection. The two unitary authorities, Portsmouth and Southampton City Councils, oversee all their local services. In some areas of Hampshire there is a third tier of parish council. These bodies provide a voice for communities and help address local issues, and some are responsible for certain areas such as village greens and war memorials. Devolution involves transferring powers from Westminster and Whitehall to Hampshire and the Solent region alongside additional funding and investment. This shift will enable local authorities to make decisions and manage services directly affecting their communities. It can include powers over transport, housing, education, healthcare and local economic development. The government plans to consult with Hampshire residents very soon to gather people's input and feedback on the prospect of devolution from the area. As part of devolution, a mayor would be elected in the spring of 2026 to head up a new combined authority across the wider region. The mayor would work with local council leaders to decide how to allocate regional funding. The combined authority, made up of Hampshire County Council, Southampton City Council, Portsmouth City Council, and the Isle of Wight Council aims to enable a group of two or more councils to collaborate and take collective decisions across council boundaries. In mayoral strategic authorities, mayors will have significant powers over housing and planning, including the ability to develop and propose the spatial development strategy for their areas, working alongside other members of the strategic authority. The region has been included in the devolution priority programme, and the government has also determined that the county council's elections, originally scheduled for May this year, should be postponed for 1 year due to plans for the reorganisation of local government in England, allowing for the mayor to be elected in 2026. Ms Rayner told the House of Commons, "I'm only agreeing to half of the requests that were made. After careful consideration, I've only agreed to postpone elections in places where this is central to our manifesto promise to develop devolution. We're not in the business of holding elections to bodies that won't exist and where we don't know what will replace them. This would be an expensive and irresponsible waste of taxpayers' money, and any party calling for these elections to go ahead must explain how this waste would be justifiable. Any by-elections, as required, would continue to go ahead as normal. The reorganisation would then be expected to be fully in place by either April 2027 or April 28. Additionally, Ms Rayner has confirmed that Hampshire will be formally invited to submit proposals for local government reorganisation. Leaders of Hampshire, Southampton, Portsmouth and Isle of Wight welcomed the announcement. Hampshire leader Nick Adams-King said the fast-track programme is a fantastic opportunity for Hampshire to self-determine and shape devolution proposals in the best interests of our residents. The government will light all two-tier... I'm going to cut the rest. For areas, well, for devolution programme priority areas, regions have to submit their proposals by September the 2025, this September, with mayoral elections in 2026 and shadow unitary elections in 2027. Watch that space.
Thank you. That was a long article. Daphne.
Right. Therapy dog Ruby is an RSPCA triumph. A neglected dog left alone for long periods in a conservatory and nervous about being touched is now a therapy dog. Ruby, a German Shepherd Cross Collie, now living in Winchester, was rescued by the RSPCA in December 2022 following concerns about her welfare. The two-year-old was taken in by the RSPCA West Hatch Animal Centre in Somerset. She was found to be underweight and had been left unattended by her owner. Anita Clark, the deputy manager at the centre, said, "Ruby was rescued by RSPCA inspectors after being kept in unsuitable conditions in a conservatory. She was underweight and was being left for long periods of time unattended by her owner. Ruby was also nervous and didn't like being touched. She had had little exposure to the outside world, but it didn't take long for Ruby to come out of her shell. Despite being insecure, she was energetic and eager to please. The RSPCA knew they needed to find Ruby a home where she could get lots of exercise and mental stimulation, as well as continuing her training. Deborah Smith from Winchester was looking for another dog to keep her 13-year-old Alfie company. The first had also come from West Hatch. She had always dreamed of getting involved in pet therapy. Deborah said, "When we first went to meet Ruby, she was very anxious, but you could tell she wanted to be affectionate, and we took to her immediately. Deborah and her partner, who have since separated, took Ruby home in April 2023, knowing she needed work. When they parted ways, Deborah," this is the partner, Deborah took Ruby. Deborah 66 said, "We felt Ruby would be best with me as I had the time to train and interact with her." Deborah decided to pursue her dream of becoming a dog therapist and started training with Therapy Dog Training UK. It took 9 months of hard work, slowly and gradually working on Ruby's anxieties. In December 2024, the pair had their assessment and passed. Deborah said, "I am very proud of her. She's such a willing, loyal and loving dog. She has blessed me enormously." The pair hope to start helping people in their local area and have already had interest from 2 local nursing homes who would like Ruby to spend time with their elderly residents. Deborah also helps Ruby will be able to help with the school reading scheme. She said it would be lovely to see Ruby helping a child who struggles with their talking or reading to develop their confidence. And that's accompanied by a lovely picture of Ruby on the beach at the seaside, looking bright-eyed and attentive. She really is a gorgeous-looking dog.
Zoo invites visitors to turn detective for half-term fun. Marble Zoo is inviting visitors to solve a new mystery this half-term. Running from Saturday, February the 15th to Monday, February the 24th, the zoo is hosting an interactive trail based on Netflix's The Creature Cases. Families can work together to solve the case of the missing pebble, an adventure involving cracking clues and revealing hidden secrets. Detectives Sam Snow and Kit Casey need help after one of the penguin's prized pebbles disappears, causing a commotion in the colony. Junior detectives can pick up an activity pack and follow a trail around the zoo to find the missing pebble. Upon solving the mystery, guests can collect a sticker and add a pebble to a penguin mural at Penguin Cove. The zoo is also celebrating the birth of a coppery tie-tai monkey, the first successful breeding of this species there. Marble's mascots, Lenny the lemur and Sammy the snow leopard, will also be making daily appearances between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. The zoo has also relaunched the Blue Star Z100 bus service, offering discounted tickets to passengers. And that piece is accompanied by a photograph of 2 penguins swimming in the water and kissing each other.
Aww. What a lovely way to finish. I'm sorry to say that's all we have time for this week. When you've finished with the recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, place the correct address label on the front, and return it as soon as possible. Thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And of course, many thanks to our readers. Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Paul Newman.
Bye-bye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening. And until the next time, goodbye and have a great week.